From the News Talk STL studios in St. Louis, it's The Right Mind Show with Todd Showalter. On tonight's episode, who won the debates with Rich Rubino? And then filmmaker Adam Boster. Also, Kirby Newberry, the king of coffee from DiscountCoffee.com, and The Right Mind studio band, Mitch Murphy and the Murphy Tones. Now, putting the fun in your dysfunctional world, here's your host, Todd Showalter.
Hey, Joey, what's going on? We got to make sure that we get through this show real quick. Got to tell you what's going on. My wife, okay, guess what happened? She got another one of those dang colds from those little kids that she hangs out with and babysits her, teaches her, whatever she does. She's coughing. She's hacking. She's like, you know, blowing liquid and stuff all over the place in my face. And I said, can you stop that? Can you just wait until at least Joey and I get through the show before I get deathly ill? Okay.
Why do they not pay these teachers enough? Teachers are around these snot-nosed kids all day, every day. They're putting their own lives on the line.
They do.
The snot-nose is going
everywhere,
up the wall, in their mouth. And then they have to go on OnlyFans to make money, to make ends meet, and then they get fired.
And that's right. And she's not going on OnlyFans, I'll tell you that, because I said, you're not doing that. We're not going that. No, she got something like one of the kids, because all the kids have different names now. They're not like, you know, John and Sally or anything. So this kid, it sounds like a car battery, like Delco or something like that. Got a cold and has a cold and obviously shared it with everybody there. And now she has it and she brings it home and Delco is now going to be the reason that we have to get to the show before I get deathly ill.
I don't know why I share my headphones with you and microphones with you. This is putting my life on the line as well.
It is, because I'm breathing all over the place. I'm probably contagious as we speak. I mean, it looks like because the station that we're moving here, apparently, and no one has still told me where we're moving to. I think you've done that on purpose. But the place is just bare and it looks like a bomb. It kind of looks like my son Blake's bedroom. I mean, it's like a mess. But
we're kicking up asbestos everywhere.
I'm breathing it.
You take down one of these sound abatement panels and then boom, there's just splotches of, I don't know what this goop is. It's on the walls everywhere. I licked one. I thought it was honeycomb.
I did too.
It is not honeycomb.
No, it's not at all. But it looks like it is. So this debate, I mean, that was Wednesday night. Did you see any of it?
The News Talk STL team went and threw a party, actually.
I wasn't invited.
You were invited. It was a soft invite. I don't know why you didn't get it.
Well, it's like where the place is moving. You haven't told me where. You have a party. You don't mention where the party is going to be. And, you know, I take those kind of things personally. So you actually were there to watch the debate?
A little bit. We were at the Westport Playhouse inside Westport Plaza, you know, where the Funny Bone is.
You have
performed stand-up at the Funny Bone.
I have actually been.
I was on an improv team? No, I paid money, so it was a class. I paid the improv trick with Bill Cott. He was a big improv guy.
He's out in California now.
He was in The Ringer, that big movie with Johnny Knoxville, where he had to play a slightly slow person.
And he did.
So what happens is after you graduate from the improv trick, you go into your final at the Westport Playhouse on stage. So I've been on that stage before.
Yes.
And they have redone that place. It's beautiful. They've got a TV that's bigger than two people standing on each other's shoulders. It's gigantic. And we had sushi from Drunken Fish. It was a big to-do.
A buddy of mine owns that, Dan Bennington. We should have him on the show and say, hey, Dan, we don't want you to talk. Just bring some sushi. You think he would do it?
Of course.
Do you like sushi?
I love sushi, especially when it's fried. I know that goes against the traditional Japanese, but I like a fried sushi when it's hot and crunchy.
Oh, yeah. So you like a cooked sushi.
A fried Philly is my favorite type with the cream cheese in the middle. Very gringo white person type of thing.
Do they have barbecue sushi?
Of course. You can sushi anything, but then if you go to a traditional Japanese type place, they'll probably spit in your face if you ask them for that.
Really? Yeah. My son and his girlfriend, they like sushi a lot. I said, well, just come on over. You know, I'll put out some hamburger and I won't cook it. I mean, but they can't do that.
Tartar,
is that what it is?
That's what they call it. I don't know why I have to stutter to say it, but yeah, it's
tartar.
It's dumb. It's a little tarted to eat that stuff.
Yeah. What kind of food do you like? We've never really just gone out, you know, and had dinner or anything yet. What kind of food do you like, Joey? This will be interesting because I'll tell you what I like. And you start though.
Me and Oprah, we love bread. Oh, my goodness. A pastry, a crust, a pizza, anything with like a flake. Oh, that's good.
So you like your carbs.
Yeah, I love them.
If
you got
carbs,
me a croissant
too,
and you shove something in a croissant, that's or these kolaches. You ever seen a kolache? It's
like a ball
of dough and they just put whatever they want in there. It could be gooey butter cake, could be fruit, could be breakfast type of stuff with bacon, egg, and cheese.
I thought they called that a casserole.
It's more
a hot pocket.
A Hot Pocket, but in a ball shape.
Exactly. Oh, I like it. Yeah, that could be good, I suppose. Yeah, you know, I like it. They always have these diets that come out. Carb-free or meat-free or something like
Atkins.
That. What I think is if you just go food-free, that's a good diet because then you're going to lose weight because you're not eating any food, right?
This may have been a short story I heard or read one time, but there was this diet where they just put you in a room and they shove all sorts of allergens into the venting system to make you sneeze.
Oh, yeah.
And then you just stay there for a week or so, and you sneeze so much that you can't even get food in your mouth. Because as soon as you put something in,
Achoo! Well, it's like my house. Everybody's sneezing at the house now, which I will be. I'm looking at my watch. Wait a minute here. No, I am looking at my watch. Yeah, I'm just counting down the minutes. Because apparently I'm not a good patient. Do you ever get that? Apparently, oh, you're a typical male. You're like, I'm sick. And just because I don't feel... Do I look feverish to you, or is that just the bronzer?
That's the bronzer, I think. You seem fine, but yeah, you probably could say your bedside manner is terrible, Dr. Wife, or whoever's taking care of you.
Bedside, did I ever tell you about... I can't tell this one on the air. It was a bedside manner doctor joke thing, but
okay.
I think it would be the last time I've been on this show. And then you'd have to take over, and I think a lot of people would prefer that happening anyway. On the line now is our political commentator expert, everything political, Rich Rubino. What did you think about the debate Wednesday night, my friend?
Well, it was very interesting, and you could see that obviously the elephant in the room was Donald Trump, who was not there. Probably benefits him not to be there because it would be every other candidate essentially excoriating them. But it's really a battle for second place, and I think you saw Ron DeSantis trying to present himself as electable, saying essentially, I'm Donald Trump without the baggage. I've been elected twice in Florida. You saw Nikki Haley trying to present herself as kind of a governor with foreign policy experience. You saw Vivek Ramaswamy basically completely counter-programming on foreign policy, more or less of a non-interventionist. And also, and this is fascinating, he began his speech by going after the chairperson of the Republican National Committee, in part because of the losses in this by not taking up the legislature in Virginia yesterday, losing the Kentucky governorship, and certainly at least losing to a incumbent Democrat in ways, and the way that she had handled 2022. That's kind of an inside baseball type thing, I think. I don't know what his actual strategy is there. Maybe he wants to run for chairman himself. I don't know. Tim Scott kind of faded into the background for the most part, although he did try it. I think he's obviously, by bringing up Bible verse, he's trying to some, and he's always done this, he's trying to, I think, he's trying to appeal specifically to the Mike Pence voter, if there is a Mike Pence voter. And Chris Christie was completely counter-programming, trying to go against Donald Trump. But it was a very interesting scenario, which is really a battle, I think, for second place in Iowa, so somebody can present themselves as an alternative to Donald Trump. And obviously the big thing that if anyone – 10 years down the road, when you look back at this debate, the one thing I think most people are going to think about and look back if they think of anything, it's Vivek Ramaswamy – essentially, when he talked about TikTok and said to Nikki Haley, he said, your daughter's on TikTok. And then Nikki Haley said, you're just scum. That's the one thing I think people are really going to take. That's going to be the main takeaway 10 years down the road.
Yeah, you had a lot of sound bites. A lot of things like you said that were going to stick out and things like that. I mean, especially you talk about Vivek when he actually went after, the media, and he basically called everyone out and said, you know, the elections were rigged. You rigged them. He said a lot of things that I think a lot of constituents or listeners or viewers, actually thought. But I don't know how well that played into his overall, you know, dealing with the issues and things like that. I thought DeSantis, he looked presidential. He came across, he had good leadership potential. But if you were going to pick one that you think is out of the game at this point, who would you pick? Because I think it was Tim Scott.
Yeah, I don't think that Tim Scott – I think Tim Scott is somebody that personally, certainly a lot of members of the Republican establishment, members of the Senate. He's very popular within the Senate, within the establishment of the Republican Party. But I think in part his message, which is about kind of an optimistic view of conservatism, kind of a sometimes emphasizing social issues that the other candidates don't. I think it's a little bit kind of out of the mainstream where the Republican Party is right now. And I don't see where there's going to be this big bump up for Tim Scott. Now, that being said, every year around Iowa, there's always somebody who about a week before just kind of takes off as somebody who's an alternative if every other candidate goes after each other. So maybe that's going to benefit him. And he's putting all of his eggs into the basket of Iowa. He's really going to put a lot of money in there. And if he doesn't come in the top two or maybe the top three, he'll probably drop out. the next day. But, you know, he's raised a valiant campaign. He's somebody who the other candidates really haven't necessarily gone after, but that probably also shows that he's not necessarily seen as a threat. And I think Chris Christie is a different animal, though, because Chris Christie, I think, well, he's not necessarily in this to win it. He might be someone like Tulsi Gabbard who just runs to the end, I think, in partly because he sees himself as somebody who has a different message of the Republican Party, someone who really wants to take on Donald Trump. And with Asa Hutchinson not making any of the debates so far, he's kind of the only game in town. So as long as he can get himself into some of the future debates, I think he'll probably stay on there till basically till the end. But I will say about Ron DeSantis, one thing about him, and this is a criticism of him that you hear often, is he's kind of off-putting personally. And when you see whenever he's asked a question, he kind of immediately goes into, and this began as his first question as well, why he'd be better than Donald Trump. He immediately kind of goes into his talking points and something that's kind of memorized, kind of a canned line, if you will. It's something that I think has really kind of plagued him. And I think he really needs to, he needs in some respects to be kind of what Chris Christie is, kind of off the cuff and a little less kind of tailor-made cardboard cutout type of a candidate that I think his handlers are kind of making him into being right now.
Yeah, that's a good point. And one of the things that Trump himself brought up, and I wonder how it fits into the scenario now, he said, well, the reason I'm not here, and I thought this was kind of funny, is that I'm just looking to see who's trying to audition for my running mate spot. Do you think obviously there are a couple that are out of the question, but do you think any of the ones from last night actually fit that role?
Yeah, we're not going to see a Trump Chris Christie ticket, is my guess here.
No, just
my guess. Unless he wants to completely go out of no. No, I don't think so. I think that Nikki Haley and him are divergent on foreign policy, and she's really, I think, if he were to choose her, the Democrats would air advertisement with her saying in the debates that this is not Donald Trump is not the right president at this time. Vivek Ramaswamy, I think is certainly too much of a neophyte, and he's somebody who really angers a lot of the Republican base specifically. And as well as some of the kind of establishment Republicans, so he would not be it. Tim Scott, yeah, potentially. He hasn't really shown. He's kind of been almost a non-entity in the race, but I could see some scenario where he becomes the running mate. At least I could see an argument for that. Ron DeSantis, because they're both in Florida, you can't have two people on the same ticket from that state, and they obviously do not like each other. And I don't think they would ever be on the same ticket. My guess is if he chooses his running mate, will somebody that was not on that stage tonight? I think there are a lot of people that are auditioning it. Someone like Marsha Blackburn, the senator from Tennessee, is somebody that I could see. Christine Noem, the governor of South Dakota, is another that I could see. But the people that were actually on that stage, I think that. My guess is there are probably some, in some respects, and this is politics, you play the long game, they're probably in a lot of the candidates. Chris Christie, I think, is just running more or less to take on Donald Trump. Nikki Haley might be running for 2028. Ron DeSantis, I think, thought he had a chance this time, but he's kind of backfired. Vivek Ramaswamy could either be running for the Senate seat coming up. He could be running for a future Senate seat or the governorship of Ohio, maybe trying to meet benefactors. Or based on what he went after last night, going after the chairman of the Republican National Committee, Maybe he's going after the job of Republican National Committee chairman. Maybe that's his ultimate aim. Tim Scott, I think that he's somebody who I think thought was going to have a stronger performance. He still might, but I think if there's anybody who would potentially be on the long list of a potential Donald Trump running mate, he's probably the only one I could see right now.
Yeah, well, another thing too, I mean, Doug Burgum, he wasn't there, and they have some type of vetting process where they decide who we're going to get to see. I mean, do you think that he still fits into the game at this point? I mean, I was kind of surprised that he wasn't there.
No, and I think when you don't make the debates, basically you're forgotten by the media, and you're forgotten by the – I mean, just the fact that you brought up Doug Burgum, you haven't really seen on any of the media coverage today the name Doug Burgum, so now he's become almost a non-entity. But he's somebody that has a lot of money. I think that the reason he got into the race, I think he figured that – there would be somewhat of an opening for a small state governor like Bill Clinton in 92 did to try to kind of get in there and everyone else goes after each other and there'd be some sort of galvanization toward him. It hasn't happened yet, but it could also be that he's looking for a cabinet position and he's almost tailor-made, if you will, for being the Secretary of Agriculture in a Republican administration. Now he's garnered a little bit of name recognition, but he's got a lot of money and he does. He's certainly almost a billionaire, so he can spend all that money going up all the way to Iowa. And maybe he thinks that somehow Iowa, because Iowa is an agriculture state and he's a governor of an agriculture state, that he'll be that person that will really catch on from grassroots and also from his advertising toward the end of the campaign. But the other one that wasn't there was Asa Hutchinson, the former governor of Arkansas. He's somebody who I think it's almost like this is he's trying to also change the trajectory of the Republican Party, but he has not garnered a lot of attention. The only attention he does get is when he goes to Republican groups and he goes after Donald Trump and gets booed. Now, is there a strategy for that? What is his ultimate aim? I don't know, but Asa Hutchinson did not make the debate, and that means that essentially him and Doug Burgum, I can't see a scenario right now where either of them make any future debates, because it just gets harder and harder and harder to meet the standards to participate in the debate.
Okay, well, we got one more to go. Obviously, there's going to be four debates. What do you think we're going to be looking at when that before between now and then?
Yeah, the next one is going to be, Donald Trump said right after the debate, he said he will not be in the debate. So it's essentially going to be, again, another battle for second place. And it's going to be, I think, a lot of what we see are today. I do think that Nikki Haley and Vivek Ramaswamy, I think Nikki Haley had viewed him in the past as just kind of a nuisance. Now I think she really sees this as personal. So it'll be interesting to see if she goes after him personally as somebody who's inexperienced, somebody who used to be a libertarian, someone who's not really Republican. I think she's really going to go after him. And I think that Ron DeSantis and Nikki Haley are probably going to see a lot of sparks fly, because they're the two that I think have a reasonable chance right now of coming in second place and being in Iowa and becoming the alternative to Donald Trump. So it's kind of a last person standing, if you will, between those two. Tim Scott's going to kind of continue his kind of positive message, I think. And certainly he's somebody who's now viewed positively within the Republican Party. But I don't see necessarily where he'll go anywhere. And Chris Christie, if he makes the debate, will pretty much be more the same of trying to go after Donald Trump, and the other candidates probably will not make the debate.
Yeah, well, Trump has such a lead at this point, though. Do you think any of these do you think anybody even has a chance out of this group? I mean, part of me is thinking, what is the point of this? I mean, do you think anybody could actually, unless something dramatic happens between now and the next one, I mean, what are they thinking? I mean, what is the strategy of these people? I mean, do they think they can actually do it?
In the case of Chris Christie and Asa Hutchinson, I think they're in it to change the message of the Republican Party. I don't think they are actually in it to win it. I think in Doug Burgum probably wants to have a position, but some of these candidates like Nikki Haley and Ron DeSantis, I think they're in it because they saw the indictments, they saw the civil trials, and they said what's going to happen is Republican Party voters are going to get sick of all this. They're going to say we need somebody who's sympathetic to much of Trump's policies, but it's not Donald Trump. And I'm going to be that person, but it hasn't materialized yet. In DeSantis's case, he's an interesting because he just got reelected, the biggest reelection of any Florida governor since 1982 with Bob Graham. He would have probably been in a more enviable position if he set out this race, was kind of a mega supporter. Then obviously he's term limited in 2026. And then by 2027, he could potentially be the candidate, the heir to the mega, whether Trump wins the presidency or does not. He would be the heir to kind of the mega electorate, if you will. You could say, I've been a supporter of Donald Trump. Now he's becoming less and less popular within the Republican Party in Florida. Only one member of Congress from the entire congressional delegation has endorsed him. Some state senators and state legislators who had endorsed him are now moving to endorse Donald Trump. Trump's ahead by about 39 points in his home state. So if he were to run in 2028 right now, I don't see where there would necessarily be an aperture or be an opening for him. I think this is a true miscalculation on his part. In terms of Nikki Haley, I think that she thought that she had a legitimate chance of winning. I think Tim Scott thought that the Republican Party was going to see his kind of more optimistic message and say, let's kind of go back to that. Vivek Ramaswamy, I don't know what his ultimate aim was. He's someone who had very little name recognition, but now he has a lot of name recognition. Now when you're talking about a governor's race for Ohio, or a Senate race in Ohio, people are immediately going to bring up his name and say, well, what about Vivek Ramaswamy? He's from Ohio. He ran this national campaign. He's made a lot of benefactors. Why not put him in? Why not clear the field for him, potentially maybe for 2026 for governor of Ohio? I think that was probably his strategy. But as I was aforementioned, he could very possibly be running for chairman of the Republican National Committee. And if he did that, he certainly got an opening salvo in by going after the incumbent.
Yeah, and also, I mean, he's obviously very intelligent. I mean, he has some good points, and one of the things that struck me is, again, it's just been all three of these debates now, it's just been the maturity factor. I mean, it seems to me that even though he's got the smarts, and he makes it a point, he's only 38 years old, but you know, at the same time, he's got some things that, you know, I remember when I was his age, that there were just some things that I think from a presidential standpoint, you kind of need those leadership qualities. And while he has all the talking points and the knowledge, I just don't know if he has the leadership potential that we're going to need. What do you think?
And it's interesting. There is some precedent for candidates running very young, and then it actually works their advantage when they run again. Al Gore ran in 1988. He was 40 years old, and he tried to emphasize the time Ronald Reagan was the oldest president, and he said, I would be the youngest president. So he tried to use that to his advantage, talking about a shifting of generations. He didn't win in 1988, but by 1992, because he garnered so much name recognition, he ran a relatively good campaign. Bill Clinton chose him as his running mate. So he's probably looking, I think he's looking at the long game. My guess is he was not thinking when he got in this race, and I'm going to beat Donald Trump, and I'm going to be the Republican nominee, then I'm going to win the general election. He obviously has a much longer game. And for him, you know, he could go two or three elections from now and still be seen as a viable candidate. And also, he's somebody that potentially, another possibility is Donald Trump could tap him for some sort of a cabinet position, the way that Joe Biden put Pete Buttigieg in his cabinet, for example. Pete Buttigieg had no name recognition outside Bend, Indiana, but he ran a formidable campaign, won Iowa last time. And what happened? Now Joe Biden puts him as transportation secretary, and now he has a viable shot of being the Democratic nominee again in 2028, and people don't see him as just a mayor of a city with less than 100,000 people. They now see him as somebody who's a national figure. So that might be his ultimate strategy, but obviously you've got to be pretty bold indeed to be 38 years old and never run for cemetery commission and all of a sudden say you want to run for president.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we got one more a little bit under a minute left. It's my favorite part. We're under a year now until the election. Is there anybody out there that could come out of nowhere that we haven't heard of?
I don't think so. The only scenario that I could see is that Tim Scott does what John Edwards did in 2004. John Edwards was very low in the polls. Then the other candidate, John Kerry, started going at, and Jeff Gephardt and Howard Dean started going after each other. And then what happened, people were looking for an alternative, a fresh face. John Edwards had really not gone after anybody, so people wanted that. And John Edwards came in second in Iowa and then eventually became Kerry's running mate. Same scenario could happen this time around. Tim Scott, people could be looking at all the other candidates going after each other and say, I really don't like this dirty politics. Tim Scott's the only alternative. He's a fresh face, if you will. And then all of a sudden, he could become the alternative to Donald Trump. But yeah, that's the only possible scenario I can see where somebody kind of somewhat comes out of the proverbial woodwork.
Okay. Well, as always, it's informative. And, I always appreciate you joining us because, again, Rich, you bring credibility to our program. So I thank you for that.
And that's a very high bar.
I don't think so, but I want to thank you, buddy, and we'll look forward to talking to you the next time. When is the next debate? When is that, Joey? When's the next debate?
It's coming up in December in Alabama, I believe.
Oh, great. Okay, it'll be great for Christmas time and the holidays. I look forward to it, and as always, I look forward to talking with
you
too. Okay, my friend. Well, thank you.
Absolutely, it was fun. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you, Rich Rubino, the official political commentator for the Right Mind Show. I tell you what, he makes us sound smart. And when we come back, we're going to have Adam Boaster to talk about filmmaking in Missouri and all over the country, as a matter of fact. In the meantime, I'm Todd Showalter, along with my good buddy Joey V. Mitch is being a little quiet back there today. That's a little suspicious. We'll be right back.
Coming up next on the Right Mind Show with Todd Showalter, we talk with Adam Boaster about how an addiction to filmmaking actually turned into a business. Welcome back to the Right Mind Show with Todd Showalter on News Talk STL. And now a man who's so unnaturally sweet, he's been known to cause cancer in lab animals, Todd Showalter.
And we're back. I'm Todd Showalter, along with my good buddy Joey V. Mitch Murphy back there is depressed about something. I'm not sure what.
No,
on the Right
no.
Mind Show. And now, sitting across from me, along with his daughter, is Adam Boaster, who's a filmmaker from Columbia, Missouri. But he's like the real deal. How are you doing, Adam?
Hey, man, doing fabulous. Actually really enjoying Missouri. Been here for a long time, born and raised, and built up Boster Castle. Now we're making movies, man.
Yeah, it's really cool, too, what you've got. I mean, because you have, like, an actual film studio. I mean, the whole nine yards. I mean, the stuff that you do in Columbia, Missouri. How did that all come about?
Jeez, man, lots of stupid, crazy antics and a bad habit of making movies, right?
Yeah, yeah.
My wife and I joke, we're like, well, we don't buy boats that have holes in them and leave them at the lake. We buy, like, film equipment and stuff, right? Yeah. So we got a 10,000-square-foot building that we have a photo company in, and we had all this extra space. And I'm like, well, I like to make movies.
Yeah.
Let's build some sets. Let's build a 2-story green screen. And it just went from there, man. We get your red cameras and grip trucks and process trailers. That's the, like, the trailer you're driving on the highway and you see another car on top of it with a bunch of lights and people around it, right?
Yeah,
that,
yeah.
That kind of crazy
it's
stuff.
It's like Boca Raton, Florida. You see cars on top of each other, but those are old people. I mean, that's a whole other story. That's not you, though. This is Columbia, Missouri.
Yeah, but well, just as crazy.
Just as crazy. Yeah, you got to be. You got to be. Yeah. What I think is really cool about your stuff, though, is that, I mean, there are a lot of filmmakers and stuff. I mean, and nothing against. This year, random filmmakers, but a lot of stuff is like a hobby and stuff. But you produce features that, you know, you with the intent that you want to sell these and make money with.
Well,
which
that'd be a great result.
That's the idea.
That'd be great.
Well, that's the idea. There's not a lot of people that that do that I know here in Missouri. I mean, Dan Bennington, I think, is one. Wyatt and Gail. I mean, there are a couple of people here in St. Louis that do that. But you go into it with the intention of, look, I'm looking to make – this is a business venture, correct?
Yeah, that's really the concept. And, I think a lot of filmmakers go, how do I get in the business?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's, like, one of the most common questions for the general population. Like, hey, this looks really exciting. How do I do that?
Right.
Right? And I get that. That's the biggest question I get across the board, bar none, Todd. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's interesting. It's like – because I said, well, I went – and I did this really weird thing that a lot of people nowadays, I think it's a scary word. I volunteered to work on films.
Oh, wow. Really?
I know.
Is that like when they don't pay you and stuff?
I know it's crazy,
yes.
But yes. And so I did that so much that I started getting, believe it or not, I got paid jobs.
No way.
I couldn't believe it.
You must be good.
No, I faked. I fake
oh,
it well, right?
Well,
right?
You do well.
Fake it till you make it.
Yeah.
So then I realized that, hey, I lived out in LA for 10 years. I moved out. I was like, hey, how am I going to get into the industry? Move out to the biggest town for film. You got to move out there. Well, man, I lived out there for 10 years and it was crazy. I mean, the highways were worse than what you described Florida earlier,
no.
You know? And it was, and after living out there for 10 years, I failed. I failed miserably.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, hey, I got to pack up all my stuff, my 3 kids, move back to my, my family's basement, you know, and start over. And I'm like, well, okay, I really want to do this industry. And I've been working in business for so long. I finally said, hey, you know what? I need to build a company that can pay my bills, you know?
Sure.
And that was a whole portion of my life of another, you know, depending on how you look at it, 10, 20 years to get that figured out, right?
Right.
And so finally I built up this company that allowed me to be able to but it was years and years and years of being an entrepreneur to the point where I could say, hey, now I understand that you have to make a product, to get back to what you're saying,
mm-hmm.
that you have to make a product for a profit. And I had to learn that to make a company. Well, so when I went into film, I'm like, hey, I need to make a film that Todd wants to watch, you know,
mm-hmm.
that you want to see,
right.
That people want to actually enjoy and buy. Otherwise, it's a really expensive hobby.
Right, exactly. And I think one of the things now, I mean, because I don't know when you were out in L.A. I was out there like in the mid-'80s and stuff. I mean, that used to be what you had to do.
Yeah.
You either went to L.A. or you went to New York, and that was – or maybe Chicago. But, I mean, those were your options.
Yep.
Now you've got – I mean, it seems that it's not so – you can make films from more locations now. I mean, the equipment's affordable. You have more capabilities. I mean, talent and crew and things like that, those are starting to develop. But are you seeing that? I mean, you've got these mini hubs now, like, say, in Oklahoma, you've got Louisiana. Atlanta is really exploding.
Yep.
Do you think St. Louis or Missouri in general has that potential?
And this is a great, great questions. And yes, you know, the cheaper you said, the cheaper the equipment got, the more people can buy it, the more people can experiment, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so what we found was that the more crap was being created.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And but it was a learning curve. Right. So in order to get to the point, like you mentioned, Wyatt Weed is a great filmmaker.
Mm-hmm.
In order to get to a level like Wyatt, you really had to work for a while to figure that stuff out. Right.
Right. Right.
And so it took a while. But yes, absolutely. The hubs have opened up. Absolutely. The amount of filmmakers, like I just got back from the American film market in Santa Monica last week.
Right, yeah.
And I was lucky enough, I met a group of filmmakers out of Kentucky that had like, you know, multiple features under their belt. Some over in Ohio that had multiple features under their belt, like me. And I'm
right.
Like, hey, finally, man, I'm meeting some people that are, like you said, outside of the LA, New York, Chicago, outside of Atlanta, you know, in our turf, building this up. And one of the things that one of the owners said to me, one of the filmmakers said to me, he said, it was a great thing. He said, you know what? I think that Hollywood needs to be taken out of the hands of the multi-billion, gazillion, jillionaires,
mm-hmm.
and that we should be able to make $50,000 a year making movies out of Columbia, Missouri.
Sure. Yeah.
And it should become a trade.
Right, and you see more of it. I mean, you see, like I was listening to a show. I got Dennis Quaid is doing. He was trying to do something in Dallas where they were trying to or Dallas Fort Worth area. They were trying to build like Austin is down there, obviously. But I mean, they're trying to. You're looking at different hubs that you could actually build. And I've said before, this particular area. Now, obviously, the tax credits that finally. I don't know how big of a deal that is, but that finally passed. So that's now going on in Missouri.
That's huge. That's like the max. That literally I'm at AFM. In the years I've gone before, there was no tax credit.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, hey, come on out and make some movies with me, man. I got all these toys. Come play with me.
Sure.
This time it's like, oh, by the way, there's a up to a 50% tax credit. And dude, literally, I got back. The phone hasn't stopped ringing.
Right.
I'm sitting here looking at my daughter, Apple, going, we're going to work on the calendar. We got to figure out when we're going to work all these films in. I got 5 appointments today on the phone about filmmakers that want to come to Missouri.
Right. Right. Exactly.
Because of tax credits.
Yeah, and that's just it. I mean, it just went into effect, so I'm not sure if it's really had a huge impact now. But we have a film, Man on Fire, that's filming here now.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I think you're going to see more and more of that. But you look at, like, the different areas, like even here in St. Louis, I mean, you've got, like, the architecture. You've got, you know, the best weather, obviously. But, I mean, you have different things that can double for other areas, like they have in New York and Chicago, and they do that. So, like, the potential is here.
Yeah.
And not only – I don't think what people – and I'm sure that you see this in Columbia. One of the things, it's not just people making films and, you know, we're hoping to sell. I mean, usually when an industry builds, there's other jobs that are available. There's caterers, there's construction people, there's all kinds of other people that you're putting to work.
Absolutely.
I mean, do you deal with that in Columbia?
Oh, man, absolutely. And so when I started my photography company, I was a one-man shop with a camera out of my garage, right? And we are now about a 30 to 40 employee company with 38 states, you know, that we work in and travel around. And so we're constantly building economy. We're constantly causing jobs. We're constantly causing more, you know, revenue to move through the state. And that's exactly what the tax credit does. Mm-hmm. It pulls that money into the state and it just goes in loops and loops and loops and loops and builds up a lot of good tax money for the state.
Nothing against people that make some costumes, go in a garage and make a film. That's
great.
If you want to do that, that's right. You know, knock yourself out. I mean, I don't care. But from a business standpoint, there's just a lot more that really goes into it that a lot of times people don't think about. So,
but you got like the El Mariachis, right? You remember
exactly,
that?
Exactly,
right?
Sure.
And I think he spent like $15,000 or something making El Mariachi in Mexico, and his mom's making sopapillas for lunch, right?
And his dolly was like a grocery cart or something like that.
That
actually works. Yeah. I mean,
And you got the Napoleon Dynamites, you know, that are $200,000 films that go crazy. You've got these you got those projects that people say, oh, I can make horror. I'm going to make it low budget. I'm going to bust like Halloween or, you know, Paranormal Activity. And it's all possible. It really, really is. But they're still rolling the blackjack 21 dice at Vegas, hoping that the ball lands in the right color with the number. So if they really back into it and go, hey, how do I do this? How do I do it strategically? That's really what we've been trying to study for decades. And I think that's why we're finding such huge success out of Boster Castle in Columbia.
Okay, well, let's get back to that because you have some projects that you're working on. And also, you have a series that you're developing now called I-70 Nights, correct?
Yes.
And you want to talk about that a little bit? What is the premise?
Well, okay, so America is dead,
all
right? And it's crumbled. And we can talk about why, but that's not really important.
That's real life.
And when that happens, when nations crumble, great men arise, right? And to protect the – basically an ever-growing town of refugees here in Missouri, the Knights they have an armored transport service that escorts goods and services down I-70. So they have to defend the supply chain.
Right? Okay.
Right. So it's really – the preppers are going to go crazy for this. It's like it is a prepper dream film, right?
Yeah.
But then they run into this girl who can feed the sick and heal people. A mysterious kind of magical girl, and that's where the story turns to this really wonderful kind of angelic, mixture where you throw Mad Max in with Walking Dead, take out all the zombies, put a Book of Eli in if you remember that,
sure,
and you get this really amazing film that gives you the guns, the explosions, the car stuff, the chases, the real action, but it's really about the heart.
Right. Okay.
If that makes sense.
No, it certainly does. And going back to that about faith-based films and things, and we were talking before we started the show about Angel Studios and things like that. I mean, I think that time is due. I think we need more films like that. I mean, is that more the direction that you're moving towards for all of your work or just this particular project?
I would love to go there and be able to go there more. The trick is being able to build products that really reach the mass audiences, right? And we've got Lost Treasure, Jesse James on Vudu, Tubi, Hulu, or Redbox Online, Plex, Amazon Prime, all these different places. But still, what we didn't have was we didn't have the marketing budget,
right?
The marketing partners like Angel Studios, right? And so that's the direction we want to go. We are going with I-70 Nights, and we'd love to continue to see that path go and follow that path. Yes.
Yeah, I think it's long overdue, and you do have some films now that are doing pretty well. So I mean, it's great to see that you're going down that road, and I wish you the best of luck with it. Now, all of your films are self-funded. Okay, that's a big undertaking, my friend.
Yes.
I know personally. What was your process for that? Are you still raising funds for this particular project?
When you make them for $5, it's easy to fund a film.
Really?
No.
Well, see, I wish, like $2 and I'll give you a hamburger type thing.
There we go. Now you're going to form a union or something. That's good negotiation.
And then we'll go on strike and then we won't be on strike. And then, hey.
Oh, my God, we're out at AFM and we couldn't get in the hotel because the hotel workers are striking. Over here, the actors are striking. The writers just finished.
Yeah.
Now the workers. I'm like, who works in LA? So becoming an entrepreneur and being in business and being able to build something successful. I built an Inc. like 500 fast growing company out of this company. And so it's actually afforded me a little bit of play money. But luckily, a lot of things I've worked on have helped me amass. But it's been being an entrepreneur. So. But to be real blunt, when you're making a movie that has an $80,000 budget, you got to be really careful. Yes, if you're self-funding that, if that means that you're borrowing money against your home, right, to make a movie or against a piece of property or you're selling a piece of property and bringing it in to do that, that's how I did it. And again, that's not an accessible thing for the masses, right? And so it's frustrating that I have to tell that to people like an audience like listening right now who are people that want to be filmmakers and like, well, I don't have that. I can't do that. No, but you can work your tail off forever, and accomplish something and then use those rewards to do it, or you can, like you said, volunteer at first, get in the film industry, work your way up and make a living doing it and get people to support you. But you were asking about I-70 Nights, and this is I'm looking to really – I-70 Nights is about a message that can change – that can help spread that – build that conversation about redemption. Build that conversation about, we'll say, of grace. Right. And so I'm seeking people that have that like mind, that have that like place in their spirit to be able to donate to a 501c3 to make this message happen. And so it's not about – in that case, it's not about the profitability. It's about getting the message out there. It's not about me making money. I make a living. I want to see the movie made. I want it to look good. I want it to have the beautiful elements, the same stuff that you find in any studio film out there and be able to draw people in so when they see it, they're not thinking about, well, that was a kind of a cheap looking, scene over there.
Right.
They're thinking about the message of the heart and the redemption and grace. if that makes sense.
So, oh, it does, sure.
So we're opening a 501c3 and looking for people who are excited about getting behind that and helping support it financially to come to life.
Okay, well, how can people get in touch with you if they do?
I love that question.
That's yeah, fabulous. Well, that's why. Yeah. It's on the cue card and everything that I don't have.
I like this. Well, Adam Boster is my name, Adam
okay.
Boster.
All right.
And if anybody goes on IMDb, they can look me up there, but they may not have the ability to get information there. I'm on Facebook.
Okay.
I could throw my flipping cell phone number out there, but I'm afraid to do that. They can send me an email at
sure.
Adam at BosterCastle.com. BosterCastle.com.
BosterCastle.com.
Yep. Castle. CASTLE.com.
Right.
Adam@BosterCastle.com.
Perfect.
Thank you.
Well, hey, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us. And you brought your daughter Apple, who talks way too much.
I know.
And
right.
But this time, I mean, we'll edit out that all out.
She's
but,
gorgeous, though. What do you say?
She
watch
is.
That,
and yeah. thank you for bringing her along, because usually it's just Joey and I, and we, you know, it's like we need some beauty in the room here.
Amen. So
that's great. Well, thank you, buddy. I appreciate you joining us, and I can't wait to see your next project.
Honored to be here, my friends.
Oh, did we pay him to say
bring
that?
Us back? I'd okay. love to come back.
You're welcome anytime.
We left him out in the hall for about 15 minutes. He was peeking through the window. I was like, Adam, you stay out there.
I know.
And
well,
he's still nice, even though we did that to him.
I can't believe it, because I do that to people, like, you know, at their homes, like about 2 a.m., and they call the police on me.
We were faking like we were even having an interview. We were just like, we weren't even talking.
I know. But don't we do that every day?
Of course.
Pretty much. You know, when Adam was talking about making films, you know, one of the things I remember, or I still experience from making films, is a lot of filmmakers are broke. And when I think about things that are broke in around the home, you know who I think about?
I think about Rick Bernstein. Is that who you're thinking about?
That's exactly who I think about.
Oh,
if you have something that's broken around your home, or you need something added on, or if you just need something fixed, whether it be electrical or plumbing or anything like that, there's only one person that you should call, and that's my buddy Rick at the Bernstein Remodelers. Rick, I've known for over 20 years. He has a variety of craftsmen that he makes sure are personally trained. And what else are they, Joey?
Super polite.
Super polite. And they work all over the St. Louis area. So if you need anything fixed or added on upon your home, or to even taken away, I want you to call my buddy Rick at the Bernstein Remodelers right now at 314-324-3024. That's 314-324-3024. And when we come back, there it is. I already hear the stallions in the background. It must be King Kirby must be here. Do you hear horses?
I heard that an elephant was euthanized at the zoo today. I hope there was no fight. I hope Kirby didn't take a shortcut.
I think the elephant's name was Donna.
Oh, that's a terrible. You give him a heart attack when you spook him like that.
I knew a girl named Donna that looked like an elephant, but that's going to get me in a lot of trouble if
okay.
I say that. But no, they euthanized the elephant. Is this like an epidemic? Are they trying to... Is this because, like, all that global warming, are they trying to kill the elephants like they wanted to kill the cows?
I think they've got all the secrets on the deep state. They say an elephant never forgets.
They never do forget. And you have to get rid of them so that they don't blab.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Between that and the cow flatulence, I mean, this is obviously a huge problem. Well, I'm sorry. I personally am sorry to hear that Donna the elephant is gone. Not that I personally knew Donna the elephant, although I did know somebody named Donna that looked like an elephant. But that's, again, a whole other story that I shouldn't have gone into.
We'll say a little prayer and come back with King
say
Kirby.
Say a little prayer. That's right. When we come back, we'll be back with the king. I'm Todd Showalter, along with my buddy Joey V on the Right Mind Show. If they'll let me, I'll be back right after this.
Coming up next on The Right Mind Show with Todd Showalter, King Kirby from DiscountCoffee.com visits our downtown St. Louis studio for the very last time. Welcome back to The Right Mind Show with Todd Showalter on News Talk STL. And now a man who's such a clean freak, he once spent a week in a sanitarium, Todd Showalter.
And we're back. I'm Todd Showalter, along with my buddy Joey V. Mitch Murphy in the background doing I don't know what. He's still a little sad that he had a birthday. He's one of those people that don't like celebrating birthdays. It's like, can we just say it's not my birthday? Me, on the other hand, I love celebrating birthdays because I have one every year. Do you like birthdays, Joey?
I do. I saw Mitch Murphy was getting creative with his instrument. I don't know. He called it a hamburine.
Oh.
It's like a big stack of ham,
well,
and he's just slapping
time,
it.
The last time he started slapping his, his instrument got us kicked off the air. Keep that put away, Mitch. Slap your instruments here on our show. There it is again. I hear the stallions that can meet, and I hear the triumphant music that we never hear when we walk into a room. And that must mean, well, I mean, God, oh my gosh, he's sitting right across from me. It's King Kirby from DiscountCoffee.com. How are you doing, King?
Good, Todd, good. How are you, Joey?
Wonderful. I actually didn't know you were going to be here in the studio. If I'd known, I'd have put up more decorations.
Yes, I know. We actually ripped everything off the walls.
It's our last day in the studio, and apparently everything is not lickable, is what we found out.
It doesn't taste like anything like it looks.
Off limits, asbestos prone, everything.
No. Well, I was surprised when I walked in. There was no furniture, and we're sitting on the floor. I guess
well, you're in
get
downtown,
cozy.
You're in downtown St. Louis. You know a lot of things. This is how a lot of buildings look because things get stolen.
Kirby's brought us a lot of lickable things, though. Snacks galore.
We can't call him. No, I'm not going to say that. He's the king. He's going to stick to King Kirby.
Right.
And you know what? You're not going to believe what he did. We were out of coffee, okay? And my wife said, Todd, you have slacked again.
Castle Showalter was out of goods?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay.
And she said, you better get on the phone. Don't get on the site. Get on the phone because last week she heard that there's customer care with DiscountCoffee.com. So I got on the phone, and I think you can attest to this, can't you, King? And I got a hold of Mary Thomas. She answered in one ring, believe it or not. I told her what I wanted. Within 24 hours, the King shows up. He's sitting across from me, and he has my coffee order, Renoco packages, which are my favorite. And I can't believe that he actually personally brought them to me.
Well, Todd, I was listening to you talk about Rick Bernstein.
Yes.
And if you have something broke.
Yeah.
Todd, I have something broke.
Oh, what could it be? Is it a carriage?
It's the kingdom. DiscountCoffee.com. We are a Missouri small family-owned business.
Yes.
And sales are just in the toilet.
They're in the toilet?
They're like poo-poo in the toilet.
Poo-poo in the toilet.
And so, normally the Renoco coffee would be delivered, by UPS or FedEx or something like that. But the King had to deliver Todd his coffee today.
Wow, I feel honored, though, at the same time, depressed. So you say things are in the toilet. What can we do to change that? I bet I know what we could do. We could get our listeners maybe to order some discount coffee from DiscountCoffee.com.
That would be awesome.
Now, would you actually personally deliver all their coffee to them?
Well, we're looking at cutting corners. So, I've got my carriage with horses.
Yeah, and, you do. They're beautiful horses.
I mean, a couple weeks ago, you and what's your name again?
Joey V.
Oh, Joey, yes.
Joey V.
This
you forgot Joey V.
This is supposed to be a comedy place, right?
A comedy
but
place.
Seriously, you guys were giving hugs.
We were giving hugs. We do that anyway. We spoon.
You got exhausted with giving hugs.
But, yes.
So we need to get more hugs. And then
more hugs.
There's a 15% discount.
There's a 15% discount if you use the promo code RIGHTMIND.
Yes. And then you're noticing your Renoco case of coffee. You have a free box of Nestle Coffee Mate Pumpkin Spice.
Pumpkin Spice. And you always
creamers.
Have free gifts with every order that you place, don't you?
We do. Normally, it's a small, like a bag of cookies or something like that, snack bags. But if you place an order for any coffee on DiscountCoffee.com and use the promotional code RIGHTMIND, you'll get 15% off your order plus a box of Coffee Mate creamers, $11.97 value. So whether it's Renoco, Folgers, Maxwell House, whatever your favorite coffee is, come to DiscountCoffee.com. And who knows? Maybe even the King will deliver it personally.
Hold the phone, as they say. You're saying that if you place an order at DiscountCoffee.com, whoever places the order will also get the pumpkin spice creamer?
Yes, that's a limited offer. So go to
it's not
coffee.
Just me.
It's not just you. I know you're special.
Well,
but it's not just you.
Yeah, okay. Because I have my pumpkin spice deodorant, but I don't think that's half as good as this creamer. Well, that's very nice of you, King. I've had a great time. And if nobody else has, at least I have. Well, until next time, I'm Todd Showalter along with my good buddy Joey B. Mitch Murphy back there with his instrument. The King is across from me. I'm Todd Showalter. As I just said, this is the Right Mind Show. And remember, if you don't have a right mind, you don't have a mind at all. Till next time, bye-bye.
Thanks for tuning in to The Right Mind Show with Todd Showalter. To find out about all things Todd, go to studiotodd.com. We will see you next Saturday night at 5 p.m. right here on 101.9, 94.1 News Talk STL, and always streaming online at newstalkstl.com.